110 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, to finish off the week, joining me today is Aaron Neuwirth, host of Out Now with Aaron and Abe, and a writer for We Live Entertainment. Welcome back, Aaron.
You nailed it that time. Yay, we're good. Let's do this.
Unfortunately, that's it. I'm not going to be able to say it anymore. Next week, I won't be able to say it. I guess practice makes perfect.
When you do your minute by minute for Ballistics X versus Sever, you'll be sure to get it right every single time, I imagine. So.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but good luck. When you do it, I'll
never,
be your guest.
Never say
that.
Never.
No, for this certain thing, I can say never. Or let's put it this way. There's a lot of other movies that I would do beforehand. How's that? Before I would get
what I'm hearing is it's on the list.
You're hearing that it's a movie I've never even heard of, so it's not even on the list. You know, like I said, when you do it, I'll gladly come in and spend a week talking with you about it. How's that?
That works too.
We have a deal there?
Yeah. I'm gonna hold you to this.
All right.
You're gonna get an email one night. You're like, oh no.
No, I don't get scared about that. You're
good.
I'm willing to take you up on that challenge. How's that?
Got it.
All right. Well, minute 110 starts with Roger checking in and goes all the way till Roger begins his roller coaster ride through the tunnel. I guess he's back at Blackpool also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagining he's back in Blackpool. For those who don't know what Blackpool is, listen to yesterday's episode.
I was going to say, that's just a fun callback to yesterday.
There you go. Well, because I want to make sure that people are paying attention. They're not just showing up in the middle. You know, there's continuity here also. We're not skipping damn around.
Damn straight, yes.
Exactly. Basically, we continue the end of the scene from yesterday where Roger shows up. Roger and Mac show up in the room to check in. What's interesting is that he goes Bartlett, McDonald, and Ashley Pitt. Now, Ashley Pitt was already waiting there. You know, we talked about him earlier this week, where I think it was even on Monday, where he was sitting looking at his watch, standing next to Soren. So, you know, why at this point are they mentioning him that he's being checked in, which is you know, an interesting way of doing that. I guess Ashley Pitt had to wait. Because he's also they've got high numbers, you know, these are the top three people that are supposed to be going out. So yeah, so it's just funny that you know, Ashley Pitt was standing there the whole time and now he's checking him in. I guess Ashley Pitt can't be checked in until Bartlett and McDonald are checked in. How's that? You know, there's a pecking order.
Whatever makes it work in their big scheme of things as far as their British efficiency of handling things to make it all click together. Something I want to note for this one in particular, because I just noticed it more in this scene of the scenes we've been doing all week. Bernstein's score is incredible, obviously. But in this sequence, like in this minute, it felt like this is stuff that would have influenced John Williams in the years to come. Like there's just something about the way it's put together where it reminded me of what a John Williams score would be later on. Not in the kind of heavier, bombastic way, but more of just like the way he can score quieter moments or, you know, dialogue driven scenes or just like moments that don't require, you know, the big bombast necessarily, but just like, you know, how he tends to put some things together. It just reminded me of Williams. That was
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, I mean, yeah. the score, as we discussed earlier this week, the score of this movie is superb. I mean, in a few weeks, one of my guests, she's a music expert. She's got a PhD in music, so hopefully she'll have a lot to explain about the way that the music works in this whole film on a whole. I mean, I've heard different rumors about the fact that, you know, I'm not enough of a music expert to know, but the rumors I've heard is that every single one of the characters has their own sub-theme.
Theme?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be surprising.
Which, yeah, at least for mentioned, John Williams does that too. I mean,
he
doesn't do it for every character, but he does do it for the main characters.
Yeah.
This movie just has a lot more main characters, I guess. You know, you don't hear in Empire Strikes Back Lando's theme. You know, it's you have Luke's theme, Leia's theme, Vader's theme, obviously. You know, sometimes Han's theme, but
you get a Cloud City theme. Regardless, this movie score is just excellent. But it just felt like very notable here in this minute that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And also just like watch, because I watched the whole thing recently just so I could be, you know, fresh on it again, in addition to watching these individual scenes. How this score wasn't nominated for an Oscar is beyond me. Like, it's a bit like, how there weren't so many Oscar nominations for this movie is beyond me. But the fact that the score wasn't is like, this is so iconic. Like, how do we not give this an award?
Exactly.
But whatever.
There's no question about that. I've mentioned that so many times. The only Oscar nomination it got was for film editing, and it didn't even win that.
Uh-huh.
And again, the editing here is amazing. There's no question about
it. It is. Yeah.
You know, it's easy to see why it was nominated, but come on. That's something that it should have won. I mean, Ferris Webster does an amazing job of editing this movie. I mean, if you look at the Golden Globes, it only got one Golden Globe nomination, and that was for Best Picture, and it lost that one too. You know, it says a lot about, I guess, the way that the Academy and the HFSB, you know, nominated things back then, because I don't know, I have no idea what they're thinking. This movie definitely deserves a lot more love than it gets when it comes to awards. And I'm still baffled that Tom Jones won Best Picture that year. You know, I'm not a fan of Tom Jones, but this movie, in my opinion, is so much better.
I mean, he has a great scene where he eats a lobster. But besides that, I mean, yeah, Best Picture is like a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so we won't go into the whole Oscar aspect of this because it just hurts too much. So basically the three of them, Bartlett and Ashley Pitt and Mac, reach the door, and we get to see another one of the Stooges. He's looking through the peephole just to make sure that nobody's paying attention to what's going on. And then you know, he quickly opens the door, and once again you get to see the blanket that's covering so that they don't see the darkness, and that's just great. You know, again, shows the detail of how they're doing this whole thing. And then they open up the door, and I love this. They walk across the compound, and then immediately the door across the way opens up. You know, it's synchronized so well. You know, that you know, the earlier this week, we talked about the two different groups that went through. They had to walk around, you know, the barracks and hide on the side before they can go in. Here it's just, okay, let's open the door here and open the door here. You're going to go down and then back up real quickly before the lights, you know, shines on the area, you know, just to add more to the suspense of the whole thing. You know, they just missed them by a fraction of a second.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can look at it from the other perspective that they knew, you know, to count it. Question is whether the spotlight is something that the guard is doing on a certain time differentiation, or it just, he thought he saw something moving there and therefore, you know, shot the spotlight on there. We shall never know. And I love the fact that then they show us in the next barracks where the three of them are showing, are now walking through. And I love the fact that you see all of these prisoners, you know, in their uniforms or in their escape uniforms, you know, ready to go. They all have amazing hats also. You know, like when a few weeks, months ago, when we were discussing, you know, the whole idea of when Griffith was showing off all of this tailoring stuff that he was doing, they never mentioned anything about hats. And like, this room looks like it's a room filled with 1930s gangsters because of all the hats, the way the hats are.
You think there's a scrounger thing, or do you think the other guy got him along with the tailoring?
I have no idea. I honestly,
it seems like it could be a scrounger yeah, thing. Like you know, he could convinced the Werner to like get a box of hats.
Yeah, we need 200 hats. You think you can handle that?
Yeah, can you manage that? Yeah, we need some film for the camera, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah, no. So I'm assuming that Griffith does that. I wonder if that's something that a tailor can do. But it looks great. And maybe they just didn't talk about the fact that they had a haberdasher. You know.
That's what I was saying. I was like, I don't know if a tailor can do what a haberdasher does. So I'm just curious, like if it's, you know,
yeah,
it's something you import.
That's something that they just didn't show us. You know, that part of the Big X organization was they had a haberdasher on hand. You know, a haberdasher group that were.
We're gonna rank the things that are missing from this film as far as things we would have liked to see, and on top of the list is gonna be, was there a haberdasher?
Exactly. I'm going through the novel. The novel doesn't mention anything about it. Nope. Doesn't mention about the whole thing. But hats. Nope. They mentioned they only discussed the Gestapo having, you know, different hats. Are these the Gestapo type hats that they stole? I don't know. It's Gestapo.
If there was a scene where there's a bunch of like hatless Gestapo walking around, that'd be something.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there is. That's a deleted scene. Yeah. where they break into, you know, to a storeroom and find 200 hats. Again, I love the fact that they have them walk through the entire barracks. So just to give us more of a visual, and as you said, you can just show, you don't need to tell. They allow us to see how many men are waiting in this barracks to go through and get out, you know, to break out. And they take the time, you know, whether it's 10 or 20 seconds, to have them walk through the entire barracks so that we can see how organized this whole thing is and how ready they are, you know, for them to get to the bathroom or the shower room or whatever you want to call it, where you see Cedric just sitting there waiting for them to show up. Now, if you look, you can see what I was discussing earlier this week about the electrical cord, that it, you know, it goes in through the trapdoor itself. So you can, again, it the detail here is just unbelievable that they thought to do this while filming it. You know, it's something, not something that most movies would think about, that you need to add in electrical wire to try to show. I mean, it's something you can just take it as a given with a lot of things, but here they want us to know that, okay, this is definitely something that needs to be planned out properly.
It's hiring the right people, and you have John Sturges, you know, making a film like this. It's going to involve a lot of moving pieces or whatnot. You have, I imagine, a bunch of production artists and what have you that are, you know, this is the only thing they get right to do. So, you know, they do the research and they do the thing they need to do. Like, it's there. I don't know enough about Sturges to know if he was like some kind of heavy taskmaster in the same way that other directors, James Cameron, are as far as getting details right. Because like Titanic is an epic that famously had all kinds of things that you just would never see. Right. But were there, like, you know, drawers that were filled with the actual kinds of clothing or sheets that you would have during the 1910s. I don't know if this movie is that kind of specificity, but I can imagine a production of this size where you have a huge cast, you have a lot of, like, you know, time in between getting to certain things. You had a lot of people that are just building scenes and building sets, like, that, you know, have the right details that are needed to give that a sense about that authenticity. And it does, it adds. I mean, look at us now. We're talking about this, you know, 50, 60 years later, and it's like, I was right there. 50, 60 years, I did a good job. But, you know, we're talking about it now, acknowledging the fact that, hey, the work was done, and it really stands out. It makes the film better for it.
Roger shows up at the trap, hands his bag over to Cedric. Then Cedric calls out Roger, and he says, good luck, which is nice.
Yep.
You know.
I wrote that down.
To do that. Yeah. And what still amazes me is that Roger's standing in, you know, he easily gets on the ladder. You know, here you have a ladder where the discussion the whole time was is that this is a 30 foot, they're digging 30 feet down. You know, but he's standing up. So he's pretty adept at standing on the ladder.
Acknowledge. Well, there's that. There's also the fact that, like, it's not really a hole, right? It's just probably just like a small platform you can, like, duck into or something. So it's the kind of thing where we can acknowledge the production design and how great it is to see the electrical wires or what have you. But also the actors are, you know, maybe less concerned with the realistic physics of the scene and just more like, hey, we're just, you know, I'm just acting with James Coburn right here. I'm going to say my line. Like, it's just a little less about the, oh, yeah, there's supposed to be a 30-foot hole down here also.
Exactly. And then Mac joins him. And I love how Mac stuffs his hat. He, like, folds his hat up and puts it in his jacket pocket. You know, we were talking just before about the gangster-style hats. You know, he's folding it. It's not really the type of thing that, you know, it...
He doesn't want to get it dirty. You know, he wants to have a clean hat, even if it has some wrinkles.
you know, and they just go one after the other to just fall in. And then you have Ashley Pitt go down also. And then they get down into the first way station. And you have a guy look like he's rowing, you know, dealing with the air pump. What's interesting is I've seen the pseudo sequel to this movie, The Great Escape 2, The Untold Story, which is based more on the real escape than this one. This one is more Hollywoodized than that one. And in that movie, when they show the guy doing the pump, you see him really exerting himself, trying to do the pump. This guy doesn't look like he's exerting himself very much. You know, he's just moving back and forth.
Yeah, well, which movie are we talking about today? Which
one? Right, so we get to see him, you know, doing the pump, and then the three of them get together, get ready to have Roger get on the trolley, and then move himself forward. I like the fact that he takes the bag and holds it in front of him. You know, I my first thought if I was doing this was I would think that I would, you know, put my bag under my stomach if it's a bag like that. But instead, he's holding it out. You know, mm-hmm. It's a little strange way to hold it, as we'll talk about next week. You know, you see that he's actually holding it the whole time, holding his hands out, which doesn't look very comfortable to be doing.
Yeah, I don't know. They're down there. They must have some kind of idea of what their best position is for them.
No, I think part of it is to show us, you know, that each of them have their bags. I think that's part of the idea here. You know, they're not going with nothing. They have something to try to keep them, you know, to whether they're going to take their rations or their compass or maps or whatever they might have with them. You know, so they're carrying that down through the mm-hmm. tunnel. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
For one thing, I just, you know, regardless of how they're positioned on these things, I like when people roll out on these little these devices. It's fun. It's fun to see. It's fun adventure. So on a general sense, I obviously we're talking about these, you know, minutes specifically, but I really do like this movie a lot. It's neat that you're doing a whole minute by minute, you know, podcast devoted to it, because this movie it's just grand adventure. It's such a, like, you know, for a movie about a prison escape where there's dramatic ways to take that, not that there's no drama in this, but it's certainly like, it's just a really fun movie. Like it does such a great, and I think that's, you know, we mentioned, and you mentioned weeks prior, you said about it being like a heist movie as much as it is a prison escape movie. And that really stands out as far as why this thing works so well, because there's a lot of like moving parts that just have a, you know, a specific direction they need to go, a very specific objective. There's a lead villain of sorts that's involved in all of this. You have this great cast, like the whole thing just works together so well. So it's easy to see why it's, you know, regardless of its lack of Oscar nominations, it's still an American classic and one of the, you know, great films ever made. So just, yeah, you know,
no question about that.
Great movie.
What's your history of, with the movie?
It's nothing too complicated. I saw it first when I was in, beyond seeing like clips and acknowledging that it exists early on, I saw it in full when I was in college for the first time, and that's, you know, over a decade, you know, a long time ago at this point. So I've just seen it on occasion ever since, and have just continually acknowledged that it's, yes, one of the great movies. So certainly one of the great war epics, if you want to call it that.
Right. Well, one of the things that I've mentioned many times is the fact that I think one of the reasons why this is such a well-received movie is because of the tone. You know, despite mm-hmm. the tragedy of this whole story, they keep the tone very light throughout most of it. I mean, come on, we've gone through 110 minutes of the movie so far, and we're in a prison camp, and there's been one character who's been killed. You know, that's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, any other movie that you can think of that's either a prison or a PW camp or something like that, you know, the death toll is usually much higher because the stakes are shown to be very high from a brutality aspect. But mm-hmm. here they're able to keep the stakes very high through the suspense of it all. But,
yeah.
But again, they still keep the tone at a low level in order to still keep it palatable. I mean, I'm not a fan of Nazis, but this movie is not filled with, you know, your typical Nazis. You have the Gestapo guys show up here and there and stuff like that, but it's hard to say that the Nazis here are really bad, you know, that they're treating the prisoners poorly or anything like that.
It occupies a certain, you know, it's a certain time too, when we're gonna go way off in this, but like it's a certain time as far as how war movies used to be made before things kind of shifted gears with Vietnam, where you want to get this kind of big Hollywood appeal factor to kind of, you know, you want to show people like, yeah, there's this thing that's going on and it's important and big, but it's also fun and adventurous because we're America and we can do this, even though it's an international cast. But you can get this thing going to like make it very celebratory because the evil is so clearly evil. We don't need to go into the extremes of how evil that is. That's just a given. So we can focus instead on the fun of all of this, which is why films like this and Bridge on the River Kwai, which is one of my favorites ever, or even like something smaller like Stalag 17, like they can get by on having this kind of looser tone compared to something that's far more, you know, dramatic and violent and what have you. This is just works as grand adventure.
Right. I mean, I love also Stalag 17 and Kwai. Kwai is also one of my all-time favorite movies, and mm-hmm. if you want to bet on something that I might do after this one, Kwai is probably very high up on that list.
I'll definitely be back on for that podcast. I'll tell you that right now.
if I get around to doing it, I first have to, you know, see how this one.
Oh, you don't know if you can squeeze out 300 episodes on Bridge of the River Kwai.
You don't know if you fit that into your schedule. The truth is, if I remember correctly, Bridge on the River Kwai is even shorter than this movie.
It's a little bit, yeah. It's like 247 or something like that, so.
Exactly. It's 5 minutes less, so. That's already a thing. No, I mean, Kwai, you know, it's 241.
It's close.
There you go. It's not even 247. Yeah. So we're talking about 10 and a half minutes shorter. So. But Kwai is more brutal than
it is. This one is.
And you got to take into consideration that Kwai came out 6 years earlier, you know, because David Lean doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't mess around.
As John Sturges.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So, you have anything else you want to say in general about this movie?
No, I'm good. I champion you to keep pushing forward because this is good stuff.
All right. Well, that is the plan. I still have about an hour left to go. Yeah, it's only 60 episodes.
And it's all the boring scenes.
Actually, I think I get a little more. I have 62 episodes to go. So, you know, a little more than an hour. But we're good. Great. Well, thank you once again for joining me this week, Aaron.
Happy to be here.
It's been a lot of fun. Yeah. Maybe you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you.
Sure thing. I host a podcast called Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I host that with my friend Abe. We talk about the weekly movie releases and other things. I write about movies at weliveentertainment.com. I write about Blu-rays and Criterions over at whysoblue.com. And I put together some filmmaker interviews every now and then over at Variety. And I'm on Twitter at Aaron's PS4.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. You can visit our Facebook group, The Cooler. Our Twitter account is GreatEscapeMXM. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!